Welcome to the FOI Equip Podcast, your free resource for learning and engaging with the scriptures from a Jewish perspective. Hi, everybody. I'm Chris Katulka. You know, the scriptures tell the story of God's chosen people and his plan to bring salvation to the whole world through Jesus, the Jewish Messiah. Come see why it matters that God would choose an ancient people to bring a timeless hope to a lost and broken world. Now, listen, I want to encourage you to go to foiequip.org to sign up to be on our mailing list. You're going to receive vital information on how you can join our free live online FOI Equip classes. Now get ready. Join our expert staff on the FOI Equip podcast as we teach the scriptures, unravel the colorful world of Jewish culture and customs, reveal God's prophetic plan, and so much more. Now enjoy this teaching from FOI Equip.
Well, let's wind things up by looking at the archaeology of the New Testament. There's so much here, we can only just take a snippet, but we'll start with the archaeological evidence for Jesus. Again, reminding what John said, things which we have seen, we proclaim to you. And let's start with Bethlehem. This is Bethlehem today, an aerial picture. You can see the Church of the Nativity as the shape of a cross laid out. But if you went back in time, you would find when this church was built, let's say this is from the time of Justinian in the 6th century. But we know already from 100 AD, there was a discovery of a mosaic in the lowest floor of this church, which read, "Lord, I came." They wouldn't have been coming there if it hadn't been something connected to the Lord. And then in 120 AD, the Emperor Hadrian, trying to eclipse things that related to Judaism, built his own sacred grove to the worship of Adonis over this site. Because in Roman thinking, Adonis was virgin born, leapt fully grown out of the head of Aphrodite. And so he's trying to supersede the Christian faith here by putting a similar Roman religious thing on top of an ancient thing. And then we have Jerome coming in 385 AD saying in his day, Bethlehem was already the most venerated spot in the world. And from Bethlehem there, he translated the Hebrew and Greek text into the Latin Vulgate. So Eusebius also recorded that Helena, the mother of the Emperor Constantine in the 4th century AD, called this a sacred place and started its protection. Here's part of the walls from Hadrian's time in the 2nd century AD, still standing. If you go into the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, I mean, if you go into the Church of the Nativity, pardon me, and go into the first room you find to your right, you'll see these remains of Hadrian's building for Adonis. Well, Herod the Great was involved with Jesus at his birth. He met the wise men. He committed the slaughter of the innocents. And we know from Josephus, Flavius, that Herod was buried at Herodium, this kind of artificial mountain that he created. But we didn't know where the tomb was. But about, let's say, 15 years ago, maybe a little less, it was determined that it was here. In fact, one of the archaeologists that worked with me in my excavations at Qumran with a backhoe found this. And now you can look at its excavation today. You see monumental stairways. You see the tomb of Herod over to the left, an amphitheater to the right, all of these things. And we know that after his death, he had the mountain covered to cover up all this stuff, only to reveal his tomb, which was later desecrated. So we know about Herod. We know that Herod loved this wine. And here, Ahuenezer, who excavated both Masada and the Herodian, has a piece of a jar. And the jar, if you look at it here, it has the date the wine was made, the kind of wine, and it says King Herod of Judah. So it clearly mentions his name on this. Come to parts of Israel, like the Galilee, where Jesus frequented. Here is his place in Capernaum, where he would have spent some time. And we see this synagogue built by a Roman centurion whose servant Jesus healed. It tells us that. This one is from the 4th century AD, but if you look under it, you can see the remains of the 1st century synagogue, the one that Jesus taught in, right underneath it. Also at this site, you see the remains of the synagogue, but just beyond the synagogue, you see houses all around. One of these has an octagonal Byzantine church built over it. The reason for that is because the Byzantines are marking something of importance. And throughout this, you see from different periods of time, inscriptions and things that says this was an early worship place from the 1st century onward. This has been identified as the house of Simon Peter for different reasons. And this is the way it may have looked in his time. In AD 380, we have an account by Gera, early pilgrim to the Holy Land, who says, "In Capernaum, the house of the Prince of the Apostles has been made into a church, with its original wall still standing. It's where the Lord cured the paralytic." So these are kind of things archaeology can give to us. We talk about the temple that was in Jerusalem. This is the second temple. Jesus had a lot to say about this temple. In Matthew 24, he is visiting it because he didn't live in Jerusalem. He only came there 3 times a year as a Jewish male for different high holidays. But the disciples who did live in Jerusalem were saying, "Look at these stones, look at the new construction." He said, "I tell you, not one of these stones that you see will be left standing upon another. They'll all be torn down." Well, that was a dramatic thing. It led to the Olivet Discourse. But archaeology revealed this destruction. Only in 1996 through 1998 was this excavation done. It was done in honor of the 3,000th anniversary of the Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And they left these stones right in the pile where they fell down on the first century street as testimony to the fact of the Roman destruction in AD 70. You see on the right-hand side, shops, like the kind the money changers used, and those go around the corner on up into the area outside the temple. But these stones were pushed down from above, just as Jesus said they would. And that's evidence of that destruction. Here's Ronnie Reich, was the excavator who did this work, and he says how they were leveled to the ground. That's exactly what Jesus said would happen, and it happened. Archaeologists revealed that. So it's quite amazing. He says you can only see this here. Now, some of those stones that fell down tell us even more. Here is one that came from up above. It has written on it, "To the place of trumpeting." And we know that from Josephus. Here's his explanation from his book on Wars of the Jews. He says it was the priest's responsibility to come at Shabbat and to blow the silver trumpet at the beginning of Shabbat and to sound the end of Shabbat. They did this over and over again. And this stone was probably right there in front of that priest to say, "Here's where you blow the trumpet." And so it fell down from that point just to the ground below. Here is Ahuznetzer with the sarcophagus, Herod the Great. That's been put together and preserved now. So we've talked about Herod. Let's talk about Pontius Pilate. He has presided over Jesus' Roman trial. Jesus has talked to him. He didn't talk to Herod, Antipas, but he talked to Pilate. And he said, "You know, everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." And of course, Pilate said, "What is truth? Who knows?" Pontius Pilate minted his own coins. You can find these coins. It's his has his signature, and some of them are even minted in the year in which Jesus was crucified. We also found a ring at Herodian that has Pilate's name on it. And then at a place called Caesarea Maritima, they found Italian excavations found at a place where Pilate had dedicated things to Tiberius Caesar. This stone that says has Tiberius in Latin at the top, and then Pontius, just the edge of it's there, and then the word Pilatus, Pontius Pilate, prefect of Judea. So we have evidence of this one who met and was presided over Jesus' trial. We have Herod's palace. You can see where Jesus was led out in part of this area, now outside of the walls, presented to the crowd by Pilate. Also, his Jewish trial, Caiaphas, his palace has been discovered. This is what it would have looked like. And there we found, not at the palace, but out in the northern part of Jerusalem, when they were building a parking lot, they found this tomb with ossuaries in it. Ossuaries are bone boxes that were for about 100 years at the end of the Second Temple period used as secondary burial. You put someone into the tomb, a year later you come and take their desiccated bones from the flesh and put them in a smaller box, and you put their name on it and then stack that in the tomb to make room for others as well. So this box was found in that particular tomb. Notice how ornate it is, beautifully inscribed, but on it is inscribed the name of Joseph Caiaphas, and the bones as well are of a man somewhere in his late 60s. So believe we found his bones and his box. Here's another particular ossuary. It has on it the name Yohanan. This is someone who was crucified, and he was buried at a place called Givat HaMiftar in Jerusalem. Here is part of the ankle bone from that ossuary, and has a crucifixion nail driven through it. But you notice, and I'll show you a better picture here, how the nail is bent. Apparently, it was driven into the cross. They were going to remove the body, but they couldn't get the nail out, which they often reused because it bent. And so they had to take the body with the nail and part of even the wood that was between the bone and the nail all out. And that now tells us for the first time exactly how someone nailed to the cross. You've seen pictures of crucifixes where they cross someone's feet over, put one nail through. That wasn't the way. We also have now, in 2007, they found a crucified victim in Rome with a nail in his ankle the same way. And it shows us that Jesus had his feet nailed on either side of the upright beam. This is the way it looked. There was even graffiti from around the 200 AD that showed someone blaspheming. Some Greek in Rome had, or excuse me, written in Greek, but it was in Rome. And they show Jesus with a donkey head on a cross and his feet on either side. It says, Alexamenos worships his God. So they're mocking, but they're showing the position of crucifixion. Now, another interesting thing we might ask, when we read in the Gospel of John, it tells us there that the Jewish authorities, if they found someone guilty of violating Jewish law, they would stone them to death. They stoned Stephen to death. They have the right and the authority to do that. But in Romans, John 18, the Sanhedrin goes to the Roman authorities and ask them to punish Jesus. And they even say, you have the right to do this. And they say, we don't. We can't. We're not permitted to put anyone to death. And the text tells us in the next verse that the word of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying by what kind of death he was about to die. Now, that was curious for people because the kind of death was crucifixion. We knew that they couldn't do that, but so maybe that's, but why would they want him to be crucified? Why didn't they just stone him? Well, from Cave 11 at Qumran, we have the Temple Scroll. And the Temple Scroll is one of the longest of the Dead Sea Scrolls. It has very interesting text about the temple, but it also has some other things. And in this place, it says, if a man is a traitor against his people and gives them up to a foreign nation, so doing evil to his people, you are to hang him on a tree until dead. On the testimony of two or three witnesses, he will be put to death, and they themselves shall hang him on the tree. So this was something that we found in the book of Deuteronomy 21. This is simply a comment that explains that this is for the act of sedition, betraying the nation. Now we see in John 11:49 that Caiaphas states that if Jesus goes on with these messianic claims and miracles, and people are calling in the Messiah, the Romans will come and take away both their place and their nation. Because what is a Messiah? He's a revolutionary. Romans don't like those kind of people. And they believe the nation will be destroyed. So it's better that one man die than the whole nation perish. So because they identified crucifixion as the modern form of hanging on a tree, and that fit the law, in order to fulfill the law, they had to go to the Romans to do it. So that's why they appealed for crucifixion. And Galatians itself says, cursed is everyone that hangs on a tree. So this is a picture of that. And archaeology helped confirm it. where Jesus was crucified and where he was buried. You had a quarry, an ancient quarry. We discovered that underneath the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. I know people debate between the Protestant side of Gordon's Calvary and the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, but we have side by side of this area, the side of the crucifixion, side of the resurrection. Here's the under the large dome, you have the place of the tomb of Jesus. Now, when you look at this, the Bible talks about a rolling stone tomb. That, in fact, was quite rare. Only rich people had it, and that fits, of course, the text of Jesus to have that kind of thing. When you look at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, they did excavations as late as just last year, and they found a stamp of the 10th Roman Legion, the one who destroyed Jerusalem. And they found this cross from the original tomb. Above it is part of the 4th century building, but beneath it, a cross, which indicates that going back to the 1st century, you had this place venerated as the place of crucifixion and burial. So the Church of the Holy Sepulchre can also be shown to have been over a quarry, which was used as a place of execution. And not a place, when he says Golgotha, a place of a skull, places of execution are places of a skull. Just like we had a pirate's flag with a skull on it, meant danger, or poison used to be labeled with a skull and crossbones to say it meant death. That's the same idea that's here. And as far as tombs go, at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, you can go just in a room adjacent to where the tomb of Jesus is and find more of these Herodian Second Temple period tombs, looking something like this. So this is where the body would have been laid out on the bench, making room for it. Now, one of the things that happened, the body of Jesus was missing. And it was a controversy. Was his body moved? Was it stolen by the disciples? An interesting archaeological discovery that was made was the Nazareth inscription. Supposedly this came from Nazareth. That's debated, but the text, nevertheless, is very interesting. It's in Greek. It was found in Nazareth. Whether it originated in Nazareth or not, it's not sure. Ended up in France in a museum back in the 1800s. But it says, Edict of Caesar, it's my decision for graves and tombs, whoever has made them for religious observance of parents or children or household members, these remain undisturbed forever. If anyone legally charges that another person is destroyed or in any manner extracted those who have been buried, or has moved with wicked intent those who have been buried to other places, committed a crime against them, or moved sepulchre-sealing stones against such a person, I order that judicial tribunal be created. And basically, they're going to be in bad situation. He says, you're absolutely not to allow anyone to move. I wish that one to suffer capital punishment under the title of tomb breaker. Now, what's this all about? Well, if you look at these lines, it talks about those cast out who are buried, move to other places, let no one move. Something happened. Someone moved a body that caused such a disturbance in the Roman Empire that this edict had to be established. And because we believe this comes from the time of rulers directly after the time of Jesus' resurrection, this must relate to that particular thing. We also know from the Tractate of the Mishnah, as well as other Roman sources, that soldiers were executed if they fell asleep on duty. And yet, when we come to the New Testament, it says that the members of the Sanhedrin said they would bribe someone if they got in trouble for saying they were asleep, in order to exonerate them that. So if the disciples had in fact stolen the body, why did not the Roman authorities relentlessly pursue them for the capital crime of grave robbery? They were found in appearance. They were flogged. They still went in appearance. No one arrested them for this. The disciples appeared in public and days following the soldiers' accusation. I'll tell you one other thing that's very interesting. Looking for clues related to the resurrection, did Jesus rise again? This is a cave entrance at a place called Beit Loria. There's a fig tree in the entrance. You have to go through the fig tree literally to get down in there. But there's a Greek inscription here in the entrance to this cave. And look at this inscription. It's a large inscription, by the way. You see a cross right below it. This is dated to the 2nd century, maybe the early 3rd century. What we have is these words, the words Jesus in Greek, and we have the word present here, or Jesus is here, it says. Jesus is present. And you have a cross, which clearly indicates it's a Christian site of veneration. And this was a meeting place for the early church. And so what this is evidence. When we have the scripture in Matthew 18, it says, if two or more gather in my name, I am there. And this idea of I am present, or Jesus is present, is related to this. A testimony to the fact that Jesus rose, they believed it, they continued on in veneration of that fact. We also have one example, some more, but here's just one from the Megiddo prison. They excavated in the floor of the Megiddo prison and found these mosaics. You have one that clearly indicates Christianity with the fish motif there. But on the right-hand side is a very interesting mosaic. There's the ichthus, the fish mosaic. Here is one that says, it's a dedication. The God-loving Ecleptos has ordered this table to the God Jesus Christ as a memorial. So this is the earliest example of a church we know in the Holy Land. And it shows that Christianity was already established up in the Holy Land, here in the Jezreel Valley. It shows us that Jesus was already worshipped as God, which shows, of course, that the resurrection took place, declaring him the Son of God with power from his resurrection from the dead. And this is well established in Israel. So we have other things too. Joseph Caiaphas's things, but let me just say this. In closing, a faith based on facts is the foundation of Christianity. True Christianity is set forth in the Bible as a credible faith, and not one based on emotions or superstitions or groundless belief. Christianity alone is based on verifiable historical truth. God repeatedly challenges us to examine and test these claims. Each person is responsible to investigate the Bible's claims of authenticity. May I say, our eternal destiny depends on it. You can believe the Bible. And if you can believe the Bible, you can believe Jesus. He's the one that said, you search the scriptures because in them you think you have eternal life. These are those that bear witness of me. If you believe Moses, you would believe me because he wrote of me. So whether it's the Old Testament or the New Testament, archaeology has repeatedly confirm the historicity of the text, the careful trustworthiness of the text, and therefore the witness of those in the text. Let me just say, I have a ministry that does more with archaeology and talking about Jewish backgrounds of the Bible. If you want to look at our website at worldofthebible.com, a lot of publications and things that would be of interest to you. Some in the area of archaeology, a handbook on biblical archaeology. It's full color and takes you through every book of the Bible and demonstrates the kind of thing we've gone through this evening. Other books on the Dead Sea Scrolls and a book called The Stones Cry Out. Another book talking about where we got our biblical manuscripts. All of this and a book also about the search for the Ark of the Covenant if you're so interested. So let me just say, I've got books on the temple, got all kind of things, self-tours of the temple. All this is available because archaeology has produced so much. Those of us who love the Word of God have been using archaeology to help students of the Bible gain a greater knowledge of the truth of the Bible. So with that, let me just say good night to everyone. I'll also mention the Evangelical Study Bible, which I had a hand in producing. It's dispensational, pre-trib, pre-mill, has a messianic focus. And I did over 100 full-color archaeological notes in there, which will also help you a great deal.
Thank you for listening to our FOI Equip podcast. Again, I want to remind you to go to foiequip.org and sign up to be on our mailing list. We'd love to see you at one of our free live online FOI Equip classes. Also, be sure to listen to our other podcasts like the Jew and Gentile podcast, hosted by yours truly and Steve Herzig. Also, the Gesher podcast, hosted by Ty Perry. You can find out more ways to get involved with the Friends of Israel Gospel Ministry by visiting foiequip.org. FOI Equip is an outreach of the Friends of Israel Gospel Ministry. We are a worldwide evangelical ministry proclaiming biblical truth about Israel and the Messiah while bringing physical and spiritual comfort to the Jewish people. Hey, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you soon.